Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of the Ocean View Podcast. No matter where you're at in our country or around the world, we thank you so much for taking the time to listen. Now sit back and enjoy this week's message.
We're excited. We're starting a brand new message series entitled Busted Brackets. And if you're not an average sports fan, the month of March is inundated with the NCAA men's college basketball tournament. And so all throughout the month, whether you turn on TV, all the networks, they have games on and you hear talks around the water cooler. And some of those talks end with stories like Cinderella Story, Sweet 16, Underdog, Upset, and we are inundated all month long with those kind of talks. So what we decided that we would do this month is really to open up the Bible and take a look in the Bible and see if we could find some of those terms within the Bible. And we found a group of individuals that really embodies a lot of those things that we're going to see this month in the tournament. We see underdogs, we see upsets, we see Cinderella stories. And so we're going to follow one group of people, and we're going to follow them through each of those different categories. It's going to be fun to be able to watch, to be able to see what God has to say about the underdog, about those that are going through an upset, and those that maybe go through a Cinderella story. But before we begin that, talk about an underdog story. The most dramatic underdog story in the history of Myrtle Beach happened about a month ago. It was all over the newspapers, made the national news. I'm just kidding, by the way. This makes the story better. But anyway, there was the YMCA 8, 9, and 10-year-old basketball league, and in it was a true underdog story. You see, my son Connor, 9 years old, is playing on one of those teams, and throughout the season, he and his other friends are trying their hardest, but they lost every stinking game, every game. I was the assistant coach because I wanted to make sure that I had an alibi and could blame someone else for their losses, which I did all the time. But they went through and they're at the last game of the regular season. And they were playing a team that has a team of kids, but they have one superstar. And so we knew that superstar is going to take the ball and all he's going to do is he's just going to take over the game and they're going to wallop us. They're going to cream us. And so our kids in the last game of the season, they open the gym doors, they walk in, and here is their hope. You know it's bad when their hope is this. I hear them talking. Okay, maybe he's not here. Maybe he's sick. Maybe they're on vacation. And they look across, and there he is on the court, and they're like, no, we're going to get creamed. So the other coach and I, we pull them together, and we lie to him and say, guys, you have a chance. You can do this. So all the kids are, okay, coach, but they're all downtrodden. So they get out on the court, and as they play during the game, halftime comes and we're down by a few points. But the kids are playing good. They're playing like a team and they're doing really well, but they're still getting beat. And so our coach looks at him and with the truest underdog coaches speak, he looks at him and he says, they might have one good player, but we have a great team. If you play your hearts out and you play together and you do everything that you can to support one another, you will have a chance to win at the end of the game. And I'm thinking, dang, you should be a pastor. I mean, come on, this is great. So the kids go back out there. I kid you not, third quarter, they're playing like they've never played before. And going into the fourth quarter, they go up by 1 point. And the kids are going crazy. And then all of a sudden, the superstar from the other team gets the ball and he's dribbling down the court. I watch my son, he's on the court. He comes up from the block and he's coming after the ball. But my kid is like a bull in a china closet sometimes. And so he runs through and he goes after the ball and he collides with the kid. Bam! And they both hit the ground. The referee, foul, and it's a foul. So I'm like, oh, no, he's going to get two shots. He's going to make the two shots. They're going to go back up. Momentum's going to swing. So I'm focused on that, and I totally miss what happens. So Connor's on the ground because when he ran into him, he hits the ground. I'm from a military family, so when I see my kid on the ground, I'm like, okay, come on, rub some dirt on it and get up. Let's go. But all of a sudden, what I didn't see happen is the superstar from the other team, he was so frustrated that he walked by and he kicked my son on the ground. And walk by. All of a sudden, I hear like uproar going on. I see our head coach walk out on the floor. I'm like, what, have you lost your mind? He's like, ref, he kicked him, he kicked him. The fans, our fans, who are really sweet people, are like, yeah, and they're just, and I'm like, what just happened? I see my son on the ground, and he's like, oh, and I'm like, come on, Connor, get up, because I had no idea what happened. Bottom line is, their team then starts jawing at our team, and we see our kids, and The head coach calls the ref. Ref didn't see it, so they don't call anything. So our coach calls a timeout. Timeout! And he brings our team together. And this is what he says. And I promise there's a reason for this story, so pay really close attention. He says this: guys, for the next 8 minutes, that's how long we had left in the game, you keep your mouth closed. You don't say a word. You play like a team. You encourage one another. You don't say a word back to them. And you fight. And at the end of the game, we'll see who wins. The kids gather together. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I kid you not, I watched our team. They didn't say one word. The other team is jawing back at them. They didn't say a word. They supported one another. And when the clock hit zero, our team won by 1 point. But watch what happens next. I watched these kids who hadn't said a word for 8 minutes scream at the top of their lungs and go to half court, jumping up and down. The fans of our fans stroll out of the stands onto the court, hugging, cheering, shouting at the top of their lungs. I'm on the sidelines going, guys, we only won one game all year. I mean, really? You know this, but it was amazing. It was incredible. But what an amazing underdog story. And if you remember that story, as we get to the end of this message, there's a lot of lessons that we can learn from this 8, 9, and 10-year-old team and the coach of our team. We're going to follow the story of God's people. And I want to give you context. If you're not a Christian, if you don't follow the Bible, let me give you a little context so you can stay with us. The Israelites, God's people, are on one side of the Jordan River. God, by Moses' hand and by his voice, has led them all the way to this point. And Moses is about to pass away, and he's passing the torch to a new leader named Joshua. And Joshua looks at the group, and God, through Joshua, says, it's time. It's time to take what I've promised you. And so I know you feel like an underdog. I know you feel like the odds are against you. You're a gaggle of just lost people because they've been in the desert for 40 years wandering. You're about to go to a town called Jericho. And Jericho's got walls, defenses, and it looks impenetrable. But I promise you, underdog, if you just trust me, you can win. And that sets the scene for what we're about to go to. So if you have your Bibles, we're going to turn to Joshua chapter 1. There's a lot in this. If you have your Bibles, your iPads, your iPhones, whatever you got, or you can follow along on the screen. Here we go. Joshua 1, 2, 3, 5. Moses, my servant, has died. He's dead. Therefore, the time has come for you, Joshua, to lead these people, the Israelites, across the Jordan River into the land I'm giving you. I promise you what I promised Moses. Pay attention to that. I promise you what I promised Moses. Wherever you set foot, you'll be on land I have given to you. From the Negev wilderness in the south, the Lebanon mountains in the north, from the Euphrates River in the east, to the Mediterranean Sea in the west, including all the land of the Hittites. In other words, the promised land. No one will be able to stand against you as long as you live, for I will be with you as I was with Moses. I will not fail you nor abandon you. Now pause. There's a lot in this because you got to understand something in the context. Here are the Israelites. What separated the Israelites from all other groups of people is they believed in one God, our God, monotheistic. They had a belief that there was one true God over everything. That there wasn't multiple gods. Remember, during this time, it was polytheistic. Most of the cultures believed in many gods. The Egyptians believed in Ra, the sun god, along with a lot of different other gods. The Canaanites and a lot of others believe in the god of Baal, which was the god of weather, which was thunderstorms and lightning, and lots of other gods. And so I want you to understand this. The Israelites are standing over here, and Joshua says, our God, listen to this, promised you something, and he's going to deliver. Now, that is foreign. Are you sure, Joshua? Because, you know, God, why would a God promise something to us? We're mere mortals. He's God. He could smite us at any time. And all the other gods, I mean, basically, we have to keep them happy so they don't get angry at us. So this is a weird God, that he actually, like, promises us things and actually wants us to have things. And then he says he will not fail us nor abandon us. I mean, he's God. Why should he care? He could do whatever he wants. That doesn't sound like a God to me. That conversation was going all around the camp because, again, it was foreign. But isn't it amazing if you're a Christian in this room that already in the Old Testament, in the book of Joshua, we start seeing the character and heartbeat of God. A lot of people look and say, well, you don't really see the caring or the heart of God until you see Jesus. No, there are pictures of how God cares and loves for his people. He says, I will give you what I promised you. I will not fail you nor abandon you. Stay the course. Now, I love these next lines. And if you're a Bible study student, you need to circle some of these things because they're amazing. Because then Joshua is going to speak. God's speaking through Joshua, and he's going to have some really strong commands for the underdog. So if you feel like an underdog today, this is God speaking to you today. Take a look at this. Be strong and courageous, for you are the one, Joshua, who will lead these people to possess all the land swore to their ancestors that I would give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the instructions Moses gave you. Do not deviate from them, turning either to the right or to the left. Then you'll be successful in everything that you do. Study this book of the law, this book of instruction continually. Meditate on it day and night so that you'll be sure to obey everything written in it. Only then will you prosper and succeed in all that you do. This is my command. Again, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. What I love about this is here are the Israelites. They're saying, is it real? Can we trust them and everything else? And then he comes and he says, be strong and courageous. Now, if you've been a Christian, you've seen this, you've heard this, you've probably seen pictures in bookstores about be strong and courageous. But I don't think we really understand why God said that. And when we break it down, I kind of call it the battle cry of the underdog. Because a lot of you, if you're feeling like an underdog, you got to remember, this is your command. God says it three times in a short amount. Be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. Why does he say that? Well, if we break it down, here's the first thing that I notice. First thing is you got to be strong. And why do we have to be strong? It's because of this. You will face enormous difficulties that will break you down to the point of exhaustion. It's as if the coach looks at the team and says, look, you got to be strong because you're about to face something you've never faced before. You think you've had it tough, you wait till you get into this match. It's going to be tougher than you could ever experience. A lot of times people outside of Christianity or Christians themselves think, okay, I'm a Christian now, everything should be easy. God, you need to show up here because it's hard and I didn't sign up for this. You know, I went to church, I heard what the pastor said, everything's supposed to be great, so I signed up. But it's not happening, God. Where are you? And meanwhile, that's not theology. That's not Christianity. God says, no. Be strong, because you're going to face it. The teacher in me thinks like this, and if you're like me, I say, all right, God, the Israelites were here, and they've got to get over there. And what you're doing is you're giving them the plan to get them to be able to cross to get to here. And the first thing God says is when you start crossing, when you start taking a step of faith, you've got to be strong because you're going to face tremendous odds against you. And so underdogs, don't be surprised when you look and you say, I don't know if I can do this. Don't be surprised when you look at something and says, God, it's going to be a miracle if we can accomplish this. God says, no. I'm with you. Don't forget this. Remember what he said. Be strong, not on your own. I'm with you. I will never fail you. And so as you take steps of faith and you start getting beat down, be strong. The second thing that I would say is be courageous. When you face those difficulties, remember, don't give up. Fight. I think so many Christians start taking steps of faith. And all of a sudden they say, okay, God, I'm going to trust you. And I take a step of faith. And then it gets really tough. And they go, see, it wasn't God's plan because it's tough. This isn't what God wanted me to do because it's just insurmountable. No. God says over here, hey, when you take those steps, be strong and courageous because it's going to be tough. And you're going to feel like giving up. But that's when you take another step of faith and you trust me more. You need to build your faith. If you're a note taker, I want you to write this down and I'm going to explain it in a second. Faithfulness is not a state of being. It's a state of becoming. You will never achieve true and full faithfulness in your lifetime. Only God had that because he was perfect. We are always going to be in a state of growing our faith. And so we have to be strong and courageous, taking steps of faith to grow our faith, because it's not a state of being faithful. It's a state of becoming faithful. We will always be becoming faithful depending on if we take steps being strong and courageous. So now the Israelites, they're here and they're saying, okay, yeah, be strong and courageous, yeah. They walk up to the Jordan River. Now don't miss this. I have seen the Jordan River at the place where the Israelites in this story have crossed. Today, in fact, in 2 months, we'll be there again. Today, if you look at it, it is a little trickle of a river. The Jordan River is not that full. But back then, it was heavy flowing, and it was difficult to navigate. And the Israelites come up to the Jordan River, and they're like, oh, gosh, we got to cross all of our people, all of our kids, everything across this raging river. This is not going to be easy. God, you know, are you sure? We got to cross this. And watch what God does to remind them that he is with them. Take a look at this. This is in Joshua 3, 14 through 16. So the people left their camp to cross the Jordan, and the priests who were carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. The presence of God. It was the harvest season, and the Jordan was overflowing its banks. But as soon as the feet of the priests who were carrying the Ark touched the water at the river's edge, the water above that point began backing up a great distance away at a town called Adam, which is near Zarethan. And the water below that point flowed into the Dead Sea until the riverbed was dry. Then all the people crossed over near the town of Jericho. You know, it's interesting. The people, as soon as the priest stepped into the water ceased. And the people are amazed. God is with us. He is with us. He won't abandon us. And then I wish I had time to tell you the whole story, but then God does something incredible. He says to them, I told you I'm with you, and I want you to do something. So each of the leaders of the tribe, there are 12 tribes of Israel all representing all the people, each of the leaders would grab a river stone, and they would place it in the spot where they crossed to commemorate what God did, his faithfulness. Do you know what's interesting is, in Christian bookstores and everywhere, you see river stones, and they usually have inscriptions. On my desk, I looked up after studying this, and on my desk I have a river stone. I received it a long time ago, and really, I received it and I didn't think of the significance. And I looked at the river stone, and here's what it says. Be strong and courageous. The Lord will be with you wherever you go. Some of you in this room need to pick up a river stone. You need to be reminded today that as you increase your faith, as you're strong and courageous, building your faith, you have to remember that your God is with you and will not fail you nor abandon you. He is with you today. In fact, Scripture reminds us over and over again. In Hebrews, it says this, Hebrews 13, 5 through 6, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. So we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper, so I will have no fear. Be strong and courageous. The Israelites cross the Jordan, and they get to the other side. Now, I want you to pick, I just like to put myself in those shoes, and I'm just going to show you how I am. I'm over here, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know if this God is real, because, you know, he keeps saying he has promises for us. I mean, let's be honest, all the other gods, they want to kill us if we don't do what they say, so this God doesn't sound right, so I'm not sure about him. And then all of a sudden, God stops the Jordan River, and I'm like, wait a second, he stopped the Jordan River? Okay, never mind, God, I'm good. We're good. Yes, strong and courageous. Whatever you got to say, I'm there. I'm with you. And then we start crossing, and I get here, and then Joshua says, be strong and courageous, yeah! And we're all screaming. It's like Braveheart all over again. I can picture it. I'm there. Yes, yes, yes! And I'm looking, and at Jericho, I've seen Jericho. Jericho is a town. It's in flat lands up against the mountain range. And there Jericho is, and it has fortified walls surrounding the city. And I'm looking at all the people who've traveled through the desert for 40 years. If you traveled through the desert for 40 years, how would you look? If I had a choice between their army and my army, I'd go with their army any day. But I'm there and I'm like, all right, I'm okay. All right, we can do this, guys. Let's get the battle plan. Joshua, what do we got to do? All right, and I'm thinking I would make the battle plan. All right, get the strongest guys up front and let's just charge. Let's just charge at them. We'll surprise them. You know, we'll get our swords. We'll get our spears. We'll do whatever we can. And we'll just try wave after wave. We'll just inundate them and we will take the city because God's with us. Let's do it. All right, Joshua, come on, give us the word. I'm sure God's ready to tell us to charge. When is it? And I want you to see what God does. Because isn't it true in our faith, Christians, that God brings us on a journey and he gives us opportunities. Take a step of faith, Terry. Take a step of faith, Terry. And then we start thinking we figured God out. All right, I'm in the river. Hey, I'm good. I know exactly what you're going to do now, God. I can figure it out. I'm not going to be surprised. So let's get the plan together. We're going to do. And then God shows up and he tells you something extremely different. Whoa. This, are you sure? Watch what God says to the Israelites. Take a look. This is Joshua 6, 2 through 5. But the Lord said to Joshua, I have given you Jericho. I can imagine me, yay, we got Jericho. Yes, God's with us. Its king and all its strong warriors. Yes, you and your fighting men should march around the town once a day for 6 days. Seven priests will walk ahead of the ark, each carrying a ram's horn. On the seventh day, you're to march around the town seven times with the priests blowing their horns. When you hear the priests give one long blast on the ram's horns, have all the people shout as loud as they can. Then the walls of the town will collapse and the people can charge straight into the town. What? Wait, let me recap. If I'm there, I'm like, let me recap this. Get the strongest men, and you want us to go toward the walls where maybe we get picked off. Maybe they start attacking us, but you want us to walk silently around the walls. I'm picturing marching bands at football games right now. I know they didn't have them back during that time, but if I was there, I would have pictured that with the funny little hats with the feathers. I mean, we all make fun of them, except if you're an instrumentalist guy, you don't make fun of those. I'm teasing. My wife was, she was a drum major, so I can make those jokes. But anyway, I'm sitting there going, what? March around the town, and then on the seventh day, march around seven towns, and then in our big secret battle plan, shout, yay, and then the walls are going to come down. God, have you lost it? Joshua, you need to knock on God's door and you need to get more instructions because that ain't no battle plan. I mean, seriously, we are going to die. It would be, let me illustrate this another way. It would be like if I told you today, if you came to me and said, Terry, my son has a spider bite and I need some medication for a spider bite. And you came to me for my greatest plan to heal the spider bite. And what I did was I took a potato and I walked up to you and handed you a potato and said, hey, here you go. This will cure your spider bite. Or it's as if you're sitting next to someone right now who has really bad breath. Don't wave your hands. I'm just the illustration. Really bad breath, and you're saying, Terry, I need it fixed now. And I say, not a problem. I'm going to go ahead and get some celery out, and I'm going to give you some celery and go ahead and start chomping on some celery. Or it'd be like some of you that says, well, Terry, I got an ear infection, and I really, really need help. It's painful. And I go ahead and I grab a lemon, and I get the lemon, and I bring the lemon to you and say, here, take some lemon, squeeze some juice, and put it in your ear. Or some of you say, Terry, I'm nauseous because you've gone on way too long in this message and I'm done with you. If that's you, then I go ahead, here, have some olives. It'll help you with the nausea. That sounds silly, doesn't it? Here's the truth. Did you know that potatoes are used for spider bites? That you cut a potato and you rub the potato on the spider bite. It actually soothes the area around. It has some antioxidants within the potato to be able to help a spider bite. Did you also know that celery, if you chew on celery, it will cure your bad breath? Did you also know that lemons have antioxidants and they have antiviral properties that if you put in your ear, it will help to heal an ear infection? Now note, I am not a doctor, so don't go home, start squeezing lots of citrus in your head. Don't do that. Check with a doctor. But yes, that does work. And last, olives, they help suppress the secretion of, obviously, the saliva in your mouth. Did you know that when you're nauseous, your body automatically, a part of nauseousness, is to increase your saliva? So olives automatically suppress the secretion, which helps the nausea within your stomach. A lot of you thought I was off my rocker for a few seconds, and now you're saying, I still don't believe you, but that's interesting. Bottom line, though, is it's like God coming up with that kind of plan. But you know what? Sometimes God reminds us that it's not about us or our plans. It's about his plans. And so watch what happens when God intervenes. When the people heard the sound of the ram's horns, they shouted as loud as they could. And suddenly the walls of Jericho collapsed. And the Israelites charged straight into the town and captured it. Isn't it amazing that God said, I will never leave you, that I gave you this land. And last week, remember we said God gave them the land. It's theirs. And he says, I am with you. underdog. You don't have to fear anything. I find it quite ironic that last month, that basketball team we coached, our coach said, I want you to march up and down that court, and I don't want you to say a word. Just trust me. And at the end of the game, when the victory was theirs, they shouted at the top of their lungs. Some of you have forgotten to trust an incredible God, to be strong and courageous, to know that He will never leave you nor forsake you, that He'll never abandon you, and that He will be with you to fulfill the promise He gave you. The question for you today is, will you have the faith to trust God? And will you shout because the victory is yours? Let me pray. Father, I thank you so much for this message. And for all those sitting in this room that feel like the underdog, that feel as if they've given up hope, I pray that you'd remind them today to be strong and courageous, to not be afraid, to know that you will never leave them, that you will not abandon them. God, that our faith is not a state of being, it's a state of becoming, that you desire to allow us the opportunity, to allow us to have our faith tested so we can take steps in trusting you. In just a moment, Pastor Stephen is going to lead us in a song, and I encourage you to sing at the top of your lungs. It's a song that it tells us and reminds us of who should we fear. We've got nothing to fear because He's beside us. So today, if you are struggling, may you proclaim in a word of praise to God that I will fear nothing, that God, I trust you. And I will be a part of the best underdog story ever. Father, I pray that you'd bless this moment. I pray that you'd encourage hearts in this room. And I pray that you'd be glorified in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast. If you would like more information about the ministries at Ocean View, or if you'd like to speak to someone directly, you can visit our website at www.ovbc.org. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day.